Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
The Athletic.
Birds soar highest in South Wales. The Cowleys are off to a flyer at Pompey and Preston Near End, as Alex says, arrivederci. This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. Howdy, listener. Matt Davis Adams here to guide you through another weird and wonderful weekend in the English Football League. Sam Parkin is back with us. How was your birthday, Sam?
I cried quite a lot. Don't want to be 40, no interest. Had a few beers and it was all wrapped up by about 7 p.m. So just lockdown living.
Yeah. I mean, you're 40 as well, so that's fine. The linchpin of the pod is back with us again, Adrian Clark. Hey, Adrian Clarkey.
yeah, never been called a linchpin before. But yeah, I'll take that. Welcome to the club, Sam.
Okay, thanks, mate.
Also joining us to talk all things championship, he covers the 1973 Daily Express National Five-A-Side Tournament winners, Derby County, for The Athletic. It's Ryan Conway. Hi, Ryan.
Hello, Matt.
There will be a bit of light-hearted joshing between Ryan and I as the podcast goes on. Right, we've got loads to discuss as ever this week, but we'll kick off with this.
Performance of the weekend.
Yes, it's a simple icebreaker format. 15 seconds, which team did the best performance this weekend? Adrian Clark, not got a good record at this game. He's pulling at Sam's heartstrings, if nothing else. He's gone for Swindon Town. Clarkie, your 15 seconds on Swindon starts now.
Is the right answer.
Yes, Swindon wrecked a few Akers, including my own, with a remarkable 2-0 win at Inform Fleetwood. Their first away clean sheet of the blimmin' season. Twinkle-toed Twine bagged a brace. They didn't have a shot on target against them and they ran the show. Sheridan should be able to walk away every weekend.
Sam, have you already voted on Twitter at the Totally Show for Swindon in this poll?
No, I'm all about the team that I'm about to wax lyrical about badly.
Okay, well, let's do that now. The team in question is Blackpool. Your 15 seconds start now.
Yeah, 9 games without a defeat now, only conceded the 3 goals in that time, completely dominated Oxford, particularly before the break. 4 players, Yates and Kaikai Sharp, dangerous in attack, and they carried a constant threat from set pieces where the 2 goals came from. Up to 10th, 3 points off the playoffs, definite dark horses.
Pretty good timing there. Now then, Ryan, I think you're the heavy favourite here, not just because you picked the team that have got by far the largest supporter base, thus you're likely to pull more votes, but I think it's the pick. It's Sheffield Wednesday. You've got 15 seconds. They start now.
So 2 shots on target, 2 goals, 2 opportunistic goals against a Barnsley team that can best be described as smash mouth. They managed to hold on to a win, and no team had dropped more points from a winning position than Sheffield Wednesday. So they get a glimmer of hope.
Didn't quite hit the timer, but used the word smash mouth, so all good.
I thought it was meant to be under the timer. That was succinct. Come on, man.
Meant to be on the timer. I'll show you how it's done now as I round things off with MK Dons. My 15 seconds starts now. The populist polls pick for me this week. Burton have been sensational of late, but MK on a fine run themselves. A 3rd win in a row for Martin's men came after they bossed possession and showed ruthless efficiency, scoring with their only 2 shots on target. First defeat in 8 for Burton. The Dons all of a sudden just 5 points off the playoffs.
See, that was over. That was over.
The word playoffs, then, Matt. The hooter.
Can I just say, Matt, I wanted to cheat this week and pick a performance of the week because I was lucky enough to be at the City Ground when Norwich were there last week on Wednesday. Norwich first half against Nottingham Forest was the best performance I've seen of any Championship team for a long, long, long time. They were sensational.
What was the resistance like, Clarkie?
Oh, pathetic.
Got to move on. Anyway, it's a busy show today. We better crack on with this weekend's Championship headlines, which are Preston Park Company with Alex Neil after winning just two of their last 13. Norwich are held, whilst Watford are the big winners in the promotion race. In the South Wales derby, it was back to winning ways for Cardiff, while Swansea continue their swan dive south. At the bottom, there were big wins for Sheffield Wednesday and Rotherham. And banners flown from planes are back as Birmingham supporters urge the club to get their dong out. Let's start, though, with the news that broke on Sunday. Preston North End have dispensed with the services of Alex Neil. He'd been in charge since the summer of 2017. Firstly, let me be very clear. Alex, I think this is a dreadful decision. You've been massively wronged. Please don't hurt me. That said, Ryan, they've only won 1 in 9. Maybe all gone a bit stale after that amount of time. So possibly fair enough.
Yeah. And I think they've only scored 9 goals this calendar year, which is the fewest in the Championship. You're not going to win many football matches scoring only so few goals. You know, they were never a swashbuckling side. They were efficient, if nothing else. But yeah, it's been a poor start to this calendar year. And you press the reset button. We've only got 8 games to go. So you press it now, and you can get a head start on planning for next season. But it's a shame for Alex Neil because obviously last year they flirted with the playoffs. Briefly as well, and I think they were second at one point. But all managers have their shelf life, don't they?
In his defence, Clarkie, it doesn't feel like they ever massively backed him, certainly in terms of the transfer market, which makes you think, what were their realistic expectations at a board level from him, other than being a fairly secure mid-table Championship side?
Yeah, I think this season you've got to cut the clubs some slack, really. I mean, they're all skint, aren't they? That none of them are making any money. So if a club doesn't show too much ambition in the transfer market, as frustrating as it is, you kind of got to just accept it, I think, and take it on the chin. That's definitely something he could use and say that I didn't have the funds to strengthen. But I look at the squad and it's a pretty strong squad still. Lack a natural goal scorer of Championship quality, I think. But around the team, a lot of good players. Obviously, home form was a nightmare. Failed to score in 10 of their home matches this season. I mean, Preston fans should count their blessings they didn't have to fork out for season tickets. But that's been a big problem. But I just think of late, shades of Karanka, just lost a bit of heart. The team's lost confidence. It was just a case of treading water. And it's just one of those situations where the club and probably Alex Neil need a change.
Amongst the early favourites for the job, Gareth Ainsworth, all the other usual contenders in there, your Harrises, your Appletons, your Mr. Stendals. Hi, Caroline. Sam, you've come up with what you feel is a better or more suitable, perhaps, alternative.
Yeah, there was a really good thread on Twitter. I presume it was a Preston fan or a Preston reporter, giving a list of the potential candidates. And I think it would be strange for Ainsworth or Appleton to go right now. I think that timing would be really odd. Great opportunity, though, it would be particularly for Gareth Ainsworth. I think that would be a really good fit, but I don't think he'd want to leave Wickham before the season was out. But yeah, I saw Callum Davidson on the list, who's a former teammate of mine at St Johnstone. Really good bloke, first and foremost, and started wonderfully well in his life in management. Just won the League Cup with St Johnstone, finished in the top 6, which is always a great achievement with that club, with the budget they've got. And I suppose it's a well-trodden path as well. He's not Glaswegian, I hasten to add, Callum, but he is a Scotsman and they seem to like them in the Championship. So that may be someone that they look at. Also, I think he played in the region of 200 games for the club as well.
Yeah, time will tell with that one. Let's get to Saturday's action then. And who saw Barnsley's coupon being busted at home by Sheffield Wednesday? A 2-1 win for the Owls at Oakwell, thanks to Jordan Rhodes' brace. Ryan, you made this your performance of the weekend. Darren Moore needed this, didn't he? It's taken a while for the first win under him to come.
Yeah, absolutely. And I watched Wednesday go down to Norwich a couple of weeks ago now. And I thought for the first half, Wednesday were really good, just in terms of keeping Norwich in front of them. They didn't, you know, they're a couple of Larry moments, but good football teams are going to do good football things. So there were signs there that they were, they could get results if they weren't playing Norwich. Barnsley are a really unique team. And, you know, one of the goals comes from a Wednesday throw-in that they then toss in across and Jordan Rhodes gets across his man. And the other one is just a really good opportunistic goal. The fact they managed to hang on as well. I think only Huddersfield have dropped more points from winning positions. And it's in the 20s in terms of the points that Wednesday have dropped when going ahead. So the fact they were able to hold on as well was a big, big feather in their cap. You know, they're still massively under the cosh, but it's a glimmer. It's a tiny glimmer of hope. And, you know, I'm pleased for Darren Moore. I think he's a good manager. I think he's a good dude as well. But yeah, I think that for me, the circumstances of the win, you know, all packaged together to create that, my pick for the performance. And like I said, two shots on target, two goals. That's what you call efficiency.
And the victory, Adrian, not just the opposition that they were playing, the division's form team over the last couple of months, but what it does for morale in terms of looking at the league table now, 6 points behind Birmingham, who are 21st, but with a game in hand, that's got a whole different feel to it, to 9 points behind them, you know, as they could have been.
Definitely, yeah. It's not over, not by a long shot. So Sheffield Wednesday will start to believe, no doubt about it. And if they can defend like they did in this game, which was against an absolute handful, we've talked at length about Barnsley and how hard they are to play against. But a back three, Erhagide, Lees and Borna, they just held firm and they showed real, real resilience. There's a good stat on Julian Borna. He made 20 clearances, which is more than the entire Barnsley team combined. So yeah, it was a really strong performance. They sort of didn't play that much football. get it forward to the front guys, Callum Patterson, Windass, Rhodes, and hope for the best. But yeah, it's a solid result, and it'll give them confidence moving forward. So they'll be a tough nut to crack, I think, in the coming weeks.
What about Barnsley, Sam? Will Ismail be concerned about this, or do you just write it off as one bad performance in what's been a magnificent six-week period?
I think he'd be concerned that, I mean, Ryan could probably answer this as well or add some gravitas to what I'm going to say, but I think Derby and now Sheffield Wednesday are the only two teams in recent memory to play more or less the exact same system against Barnsley and try and counteract them that way, and both have had relevant success. I think Bournemouth and Wickham were the two games in between where they went their own way and obviously got defeated. So maybe that is the blueprint for other clubs. The Derby game at Barnsley was horrific. There was probably a little bit more in the game on Saturday, but Adrian's right. It was just about the direct running of the Sheffield Wednesday front players. Played 126 long balls to Barnsley's 92. I think that tells a story. But I think the biggest picture is that Barnsley are doing amazingly well and the fixtures are relatively kind. They've played all of the top 12 away. So just two games against top half teams at Oakwell to go.
Yeah, and the last one of those is against Norwich on the last day, and they will have been long since promoted by then, one would think.
They might have. I was going to say Steve Evans's hat on, but we can say Ryan Conway's hat on and the flip-flops.
Yeah, you can't see it, listener, but it's a sensational piece of millinery. Is that the right word?
That is good. If it's correct.
It's just drip. I'm bringing levels of drip to the Totally Football League Show podcast. Yeah.
I'm nodding as if I know what drip is.
I was going to say, you're talking to two 40-year-olds and one nearly 40-year-old. We're smiling politely. Speaking of dull games involving Derby, there was another one at the Bet365 Stadium this weekend. Had 0-0 written all over it. Jacob Brown, though, popped up with the winning goal to stop Ryan from falling asleep. Let's hear how Ryan described the game first.
It's really difficult to know where to start when the game was just so sexless.
Sexless and pointless then for Derby. 7 matches without a win for Wayne Rooney's Rams. Only 5 points above the relegation zone. 8 games to go. Didn't muster a shot on target. Ryan, they didn't play very well by the sounds of it.
It was f***ing garbage. Sorry. Sorry. But it was. It really was that bad. So they went to what was a 3-4-3. They tweaked it a bit because they went 3-5-2 against Brentford in the second half and got back into the game. And they tried to roll with the sort of three-man defence again this time and use the wing-backs as width. And because Stoke played that way as well, they kind of cancelled each other out. Colin Kazim-Richards has been nursing a hip injury for a couple of weeks and could barely move. Felt really, really sorry for him out there. He was so isolated. He couldn't press. He didn't have that burst. Couldn't really make any sharp movements in the box to get across his man. But even if he'd have done that, it'd have been pointless because there was just no service going in there. Louis Sibley was played on the left, and I feel really sorry for him because he's an attacking midfielder that needs to be in the centre of the pitch. Putting him out on the left, he's handcuffed by the touchline there because he wants to have the freedom to go either way. It was just so bad. You've got two number eights in there in Graham Shinney and Jason Knight who are, they're really good players, but they're functional. They're not going to carve you open from deep. And it was just to register five shots against Stoke, which is no disrespect to Stoke, but they're a mid-table team who are not exactly watertight at the back. To register just five shots and none on target is bad.
Can I just ask you, Ryan, what's the feeling among, well, with yourself and with Derby fans on Rooney's tinkering? Because it seems from the outside looking in, every game is a different formation. Every game, it's multiple changes. It doesn't seem to me like they're building up any kind of rhythm.
Yeah, it's strange, actually. So not a fan is the short answer by myself or by the fans. Not a fan of all the tinkering and the switches in formation, the changes in personnel, the constant shuffling of the deck. It feels like we've come full circle back to the start of the season with Philip Cocu, where he would basically do the same. The strange thing is obviously when Rooney got the job, he preached simplicity, a simple way of playing, a simple style, a formation that you would know and recognise from game to game. And they had success with that. And then he said in a press conference, I think it was before this game, it was before the Brentford game, where he basically said his philosophy right now is game to game. Well, that's not a philosophy. That's organised chaos. That's just randomness. That's not an identity or a philosophy.
Two other big takeaways from this game. One was yours, which we'll get to in a minute. The other one, you mentioned that CKR effectively playing on one leg. You'd have thought, therefore, that maybe Martin Waghorn would get a game. But if you thought that, then you hadn't been following the story because he's had a fallout with Rooney.
Yeah, so after the press conference, Rooney had said that Martin's behaviour was not acceptable on Friday's training session. He said it was less about the training and more about the behaviour, which is slightly strange because on Thursday, on the press conference on Thursday, he said Waghorn had been excellent in training. And then when he was asked about that again after Friday, he sort of went, yeah, but that was Thursday. And Rooney has done this before. Dwayne Holmes was a casualty of it as well, where he was left out for footballing reasons. Wayne had said, he can get back into the side with good training. 10 days later, Dwayne was sold to Huddersfield. I think Martin Waghorn is serving out his notice period at Derby.
This needs an explanation. Tweeted at 2:30 PM at RJConway92. A lovely steward has gone to collect my hot chocolate and donuts from Greg's after she called me a muppet and said I'd give her headaches. Threw in a sausage roll and a yum yum for her troubles. Skilled negotiator.
Big up Lisa. Big up Lisa, the Stoke steward, who was wonderful.
On the face of it, this smacks of divaism, Ryan. Why are you making stewards go and get you Greg's?
No. I didn't make her. I didn't make her. That wasn't what was happening. But it was a bit of divaism, but I didn't make her go and get it. I was complaining. I asked if there was any water or coffee at Stoke, and she had said no because of the restrictions. Some stadiums have them, some don't. So I was like, okay, I'll order a coffee. But then I was whinging at the £2 delivery charge from Just Eat. So as she heard my complaints and then went and fetched my Greggs, and I felt bad for that. I felt bad, so I chucked in some goodies. She said I remind her of her son and give her headaches because I wouldn't stop moaning.
It's definitely the best story to come from the day. Sam, you want to come in on that?
Yeah, it's obviously the way to get free grub because Chris from BBC Solent, whose surname escapes me, skipped breakfast before the cup game yesterday, put it on Twitter, and there was a Domino's waiting for him when he turned up to take the mic.
Right, we've just mentioned Greggs, Domino's and Just Eat. If any of those companies want to get in touch with producer Abby to give us some free stuff, then please feel free. I want to get a quick thought, Sam, from you on the Birmingham situation, more specifically the fact that Lee Bowyer has gone in there and left Charlton. Obviously, you've got the inside track on this with your great paldom with Johnny Jackson, his assistant at Charlton. What's going on here? Why has he swapped a team that looked like they might be heading for League One and are bonkers off the pitch for one that finally seems to have some stability?
I think that he'd become under increasing scrutiny from the supporters. And I think it felt like, from the outside, the right time maybe for Lee Bowyer to seek a new challenge, because you didn't want it to turn sour, given the history he had with the club, as a player, and then, of course, during that brilliant promotion season when him and Johnny worked absolute wonders. And I think he'll forever be remembered for that now. But I think the recent fallings out with players as well probably has not helped his mood in presses and such like. I felt that the time was probably right, and they've had opportunities. There's certainly been interest in them, I think, as a pair in the last year, so he showed real loyalty to this point. And I just think Birmingham probably would be a greater salary, I'm guessing here, and an opportunity to go back to a club which he served with distinction as well. I'm disappointed at Charlton that Johnny didn't get the job, because I think it's 4 years he's been at it now as a number two, and I know how badly he wants to do it, and that will happen, I hope, in the long term. And he's in a great position now. And I think he's fortunate in that he's got a good bloke coming in. I mean, I don't know Nigel Adkins, but he's obviously had great success in that division. I think he's an astute manager, and he seems like a good type as well. So I think it's worked out okay in the end, but obviously I was a little bit disappointed that he wasn't given the opportunity right now.
Yeah, we'll talk more Charlton later. For now, though, I want to move on to Bristol City 0, Rotherham 2, a sixth successive home defeat for Bristol City, beaten by the relegation battlers. Rotherham recorded 25 positive COVID tests last week. Paul Warne was at home isolating. Clarky, spirit is an abstract concept, can't really be measured, but Rotherham seemed to have quite a lot of it.
I didn't want to take away performance of the weekend from Swindon once I committed to it on the WhatsApp group, but Rotherham would have been my next choice, but just because of that context. I'll admit, I had a bet on Bristol City in this game because I fancied them really, really strongly because of the COVID issue. And we know that it can affect players and in different ways. So this was a quite remarkable performance. They were physical. They got the better of Bristol City in that department. We know that they're dogged and really disciplined as a team, and they fully deserved to win the game. You know, it was a really strong performance from Rotherham, and it's the kind of display, the kind of win, even though Bristol City are rubbish at home, we know that. The kind of performance that will surely give them the optimism now that they'll steer clear of relegation. Those four games in hand, you've got to back them to win maybe two of them. I mean, especially against the sides in the lower half, they've got a pretty good record this season, Rotherham. And I just like the look of their team. Wing, Barlaser, Crooks in the engine room did a great job in this game. So yeah, fantastic from Rotherham's point of view, given the circumstances.
Ryan, you're not convinced? They've got 8 matches in 26 days. It's a big old ask.
Yeah, I was more shaking my head that they'll stay clear of relegation. Because I was like, no. And like, the team I cover also needs to stay clear of it as well. So what are you doing, Adrian?
Well, they've got Coventry, Birmingham at Wickham at home. Now, for me, they're absolutely winnable games. And I've also looked at some of their other fixtures. A lot of potential beach teams. Blackburn, QPR, Millwall, Luton, Borough, teams that might not have that much to play for soon. So there's a lot of winnable games, I think, for the Millers.
Yeah, they've got eight games in April coming up because of obviously all the rearranged fixtures and stuff like that. And I think their squad is quite small. That'll be the real acid test, is if you can get through that without just capitulating towards the back end of that run. You know, it's a lot of games in such a short space of time. How do you rotate? You know, what's the rest period going to be like? What are you going to work on the training ground, you know, tailored specific to the opposition? Now, you know, I hate Rotherham because I actually quite enjoy them. the games I've watched them play, and obviously more notably closely watching them against Derby, they tend to set these really nice pressing traps where you think you're safe, and then they just hit you with this high press across the front, and with them flooding the middle of the park, that sort of 3-5-2 system, they make it so difficult for you to play through. But sadly, I agree with Adrian. They've absolutely got a fighting chance to get out of it. And look, they only need to win two of those games in hand to really put the heat on Derby and Coventry and Birmingham. And Forest, and even Huddersfield. You throw Huddersfield in there as well. They're definitely doable, and I don't like it. It makes me uncomfortable.
Sam, we mentioned all those candidates for the Preston job. Paul Warne wasn't amongst them. Whether they stay up or not, do you think that there's a possibility that Championship teams with slightly loftier ambitions might start looking at him, because it feels like he's done one of the best managerial jobs in the division this season?
Yeah, quite possibly. I suppose it's transferring his skills and his tactical awareness to better players, if that makes sense. You know, more high profile players, players that are on more money, all those type of players with egos, all that comes into hand. And obviously Gareth Ainsworth, I'd put in the same bracket as Paul Warne, because they play quite uncompromising football. It's all about togetherness. It's a bit left field, some of Paul Warne's stuff, which is brilliant. And he's one of the most open talkers to the press, which I love. I don't understand why they're not all like that. So I've got huge respect for him, but it's whether someone with a bigger budget and aspirations of getting in the Premier League would go for someone who has played, I suppose, a robust, you know, way of playing, set pieces, big men up front. I mean, Nigel Pearson compared them to a basketball team at the weekend, which was probably a little bit unnecessary, but, you know, shows what Rotherham are actually like when you're facing up against them, and also shows Bristol City's inadequacies, me and Clarkie have spoken about often this season.
It was interesting. Nigel Pearson basically called his team too small, didn't he, after the game? So he's blaming sort of diminutive Lee Johnson for constructing a diminutive team in his own mould. So yeah, I think if you're under 5'10" and at Ashton Gate in a minute out of contract, you're probably sweating a little bit.
Ryan, one thing we haven't mentioned much in terms of the relegation scrap, but a Coventry, I don't know why we haven't spent much time counting them in the fight, but they very much are, aren't they? Just a point above Birmingham, couldn't beat Wickham at the weekend. That's not a great sign.
No, it's not. They're a strange team, Coventry. I do quite enjoy them. Because I think the midfield pairing of Gustavo Hamer and Matty James are really, really good. And they're another team that set quite nice pressing traps. And then they spring on the counter really well. But they concede a lot of goals, and they themselves aren't exactly free-flowing. I think they've scored 32 this season, which is, you know, bottom five, I think it is, in the Championship. But I think they might have enough quality to just about stay up, and their running is rather kind as well, if you want to, you know, term any game in the Championship kind. Their set of fixtures isn't as brutal as, like, for example, Birmingham's, and even Derby have got a couple of games that they could get something from, and then, oh, it's Norwich, and then they've got a few more, and then you're going to Swansea, whereas Coventry don't really have that. I think they've got a nice way, if you want one, to end the season, and I think they'll just about be safe. I like the makeup of their midfield. They transition in attacks pretty well. I think they'll just about be fine.
Good news for fans of segues. This is where I'm going to bring in producer Abby to talk about the odds for relegation in the Championship as set by our sponsor Paddy Power. Abby, Wickham, I bet they're about 1 to 500. But what about everybody else?
Wickham are not even on the web page. You can't bet on them to be relegated. I think they did reach like 1 to 1,000 at one point. But anyway, Sheffield Wednesday are 1 to 9 to be relegated. Birmingham 5 to 6. Those are the only two that are odds on. Rotherham then 23 to 10. And then we come to Coventry and Derby, who are both 9 to 2 to be relegated. Interestingly, we've got Preston in here at 22 to 1. So managerial change affecting Paddy Power, perhaps, and one at Nottingham Forest at 35 to 1.
Wow. That's, yeah, okay. We'll take that. Thanks very much. All right, Ryan, we're bidding you farewell at this point. Don't worry, I'm sure you'll have plenty of opportunity to talk about League One stuff next season. Because Derby might get relegated, you see, that's the joke. Thanks for joining us. I would say good luck for the rest of the season, personally, if not professionally, but it's been a pleasure having you.
Why do you always choose violence, Matt?
Because
always,
I'm a bitter.
You always choose violence.
It's not violence. It's just good-natured Josh.
Isn't it the anniversary of something to do with Brian Clough yesterday? I saw some nice tributes. Can't you just be friends?
Would have been his birthday. Yeah.
Can't
I hate
be friends,
Matt Davis Adams. I don't like you very much.
Can you unite over old Big Ed?
You guys aren't safe either. You know, you get sucked back into the relegation playoff with your. You know, you could fill the City Ground with all the players you have in your squad. That would be good, wouldn't it?
Matt, can you just be nicer to the guests? You know, we like Ryan. We want him to come back.
Listen, I like Ryan a lot. I just think he's a good man with a bad job. but that's fine. Ryan, we love you. We'll speak to you again very soon.
Thanks for having me on, guys. Pleasure as always. Bye.
Place your bets. Welcome to Pep Roulette. Ta, I'm feeling confident today, me. So your selection, sir? To start up front, blue number 9 and 10, 17 as well, just behind the front two. Good luck, sir. Blue number 7, unlucky, sir. Sterling? He started last week.
Predicting Pep's lineups can be tricky these days, but fortunately with Paddy Power's Acca offer, if you don't get one leg of your 4+-fold Acca right, we'll give you your money back as a free bet. Paddy Power! Max free bet £10, min odds 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive, exclude shop bets, excludes enhanced match odds. T's and C's apply. 18+, begambleaware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis Adams.
League One headlines. Cowley gets Pompey playing up. Nigel Atkins is back. His Charlton side got 2 goals on Saturday, which according to Nigel's Twitter is 1 fewer than you need today, listener.
Now, what's your 3 goals for the day?
Rochdale are back. High scoring, high conceding. You love to see it. All the teams in the automatic and playoff positions drew. Boring. While Swindon were the only team in the bottom 6 to stick a W next to their name. 2 points separate them in 19th and Dale in 24th. We'll start at the other end of the table, though. Portsmouth 2, Ipswich 1. On Friday, Danny Cowley became Pompey boss. Just a day later, he took charge of his new troops for the first time, overseeing a 2-1 victory against the Tractor Boys. It was the visitors who took the lead through James Norwood, but goals from Ronan Curtis and Marcus Harness gave NCDC their first win as Pompey bosses. That is lovely scripting, Abby. NCDC, that is right. I mean, don't know what a drip is, but I certainly get an 80s rock reference. Adrian, my first thought here was... A, Cowley and Portsmouth just for some reason seem like a good fit, but also might he be thinking, could have held on and got the Preston job? It seems like he wanted a Championship one rather than a League One, which is a very obvious thing to say, but you take my point.
I do take your point and I'll roll with it. I think that Cowley and Cook were both pretty unlucky not to get Championship jobs. I think they were more than good enough to get a job like a Preston or some of the other ones that have come and gone. But they've landed in two really strong League One clubs with huge fan bases, two clubs with great potential, who should feel grateful to have them, in my opinion. I'm a big fan of both. I like the Cowleys. I think they really understand football, so hardworking. They've earned it. That's what I love about the Cowleys. They started off, didn't they, in Essex, Concord Rangers. It's an amazing story, and they've got there through graft and the acquisition of knowledge and just learning as they went, and look where they are now. Portsmouth, what a job that is for them. And I wish them the best of luck. I think they'll get a tune out of the players. It feels like Kenny Jackett, it just got a bit stale. That can happen. Same voice, same tactics for too long. So having someone with fresh ideas, will re-energise them. It will get the likes of Ronan Curtis going, I'm sure. And like it did at the weekend. And yeah, Pompey, as we've discussed at length, have a squad that's good enough to get promoted. So could turn out to be an inspired appointment, that.
And as Cowley said himself, Sam, in the post-match, a massive bonus for him to be able to get a period off now over the international break. They haven't got a game coming up this week, so he can spend some time on the training pitch with them and moulding them into the image that he wants.
Definitely. For both managers concerned here, I thought that Portsmouth looked like they'd picked up Danny Cowley's method straight away. I think it was... You know, it wasn't loads of difference, but certainly played with a quicker tempo, nice quick passing, tried to play out as well, which is, you know, what Adrian's just talking about there. They really got pigeonholed a few years ago as just a direct team because they played that way with Lincoln for a couple of seasons. But obviously they tried to evolve latterly at Lincoln, played slightly differently at Huddersfield. And I spent a bit of time with Nicky on a show for a game recently and really enjoyed his company. Deep thinker about the game. I think they'll do brilliantly and recovered well at the weekend because Ipswich were by far the better side, I thought, before the break. I just wanted to, building up to the game, I was out pushing the baby about and I didn't want to listen to Bournemouth Southampton. It was it didn't grab me at all on Saturday morning. So I ended up listening to the build up to Portsmouth Ipswich on BBC Suffolk. And don't ask me why, but Paul Cook, big interview. And I think he's got a bigger challenge than he realised. I think there's a lot of work to be done at Ipswich. And at the moment, I think he's been asked the same questions week after week. You know, there's been a few poor performances already under his tenure, and he can't really give an answer other than he needs time on the training ground and needs to get his methods into these players who have got bad habits. So that is very much a work in progress. I expect Portsmouth, on the other hand, to finish much stronger.
Obviously, Paul Cook, he was the Pompey manager and successfully so led them to the League Two title. But you look at those two jobs in isolation, and Ipswich, you know, historically they possibly would say they're a bigger club, but Portsmouth's a more stable club, isn't it? So that's probably the more appealing of the two jobs.
Yeah, I think they're both good jobs. I really do. Yeah, obviously the ownership issue is a little bit up in the air at Ipswich, but what they've got is a really good academy, and they've got excellent young players that will get better. They've got a proper striker in James Norwood. I think if they can keep him fit, he will score goals. Yeah, it's just, he spoke, didn't he, at the weekend afterwards about not being mentally at the right level, just a little bit mentally soft. And he's just going to have to toughen them up, but that you can't do that overnight. I'm just thinking about their run in Ipswich. I think 8 of the 11 are against teams in the bottom third. Now, it doesn't mean they're easy games, but they are games that they should be on the front foot in, chasing the playoffs. Will he go to two up top? It's not really his thing. He's always been more of a 4-2-3-1 man, Cookie, but it just might be the right time to just throw a little bit of caution to the wind and try something different. It just feels like attack might be the best form of defence between now and the end of the season. And I think Ipswich fans would love to see it, even if they just about failed. Just to have a real go.
Yeah, and like Portsmouth, no midweek game for them, so they've got a full week building up to their next matches on Saturday. Let's go to Rochdale 3, Peterborough 3. Peterborough in bright pink with 2-0 up at the break. However, in the 90th minute, Rochdale turned it round to lead 3-2, only to then concede an injury time penalty and mean that it finished 3-3, and also mean that Rochdale have won a grand total of one home game all season. But Sam, this does give them a bit of momentum, having got a result against a promotion chaser. They needed some positivity, and this will hopefully provide it.
Yeah, they've shown on, you know, a number of occasions this season, if you put aside the last few weeks when they couldn't score for love nor money, but they've shown real spirit to come back from deficits multiple times. And I felt they did this again in this game. They're much better, Rochdale, when they put opposition teams under pressure and put the ball in the box. And certainly, went that way at the weekend. But yeah, some really good goals in this game as well. Dembele's was obviously an absolute peach. But yeah, it'll probably go down to the wire for Rochdale. They have to improve at home. They have to get Lund back, who was a revelation when we were speaking about Rochdale a few weeks ago. And the biggest thing, the biggest problem to take away from this game is that Humphreys left injured, who, when I've seen in the flesh this season, looks like a really good player. Someone who I wouldn't imagine will be at Rochdale next season. I've been that impressed with him. So if he doesn't recover quickly, you know, it's going to be difficult for them to get away from trouble.
What's going on with Posh, Clarkey? They've gone from 6 wins in a row to 1 win in 5.
Not defending as well as they were, that's for sure. Sort of flitted between a back 4 and a back 3. The keeper's had a bad patch as well, and that can make a difference, can't it, if your goalie's out of form. And Christy Pym is a pretty good keeper at League One level. I'd say he's one of the better ones, but he's made a few rickets lately, and it's cost goals. And if the goalkeeper costs you goals, it'll cost you points, won't it? So I think that's the crux of it. Not defending, not just the keeper, just not defending well enough as a team at the moment. They definitely got flustered, as Sam said, when Rochdale decided to just put balls into the box. They forced errors. So that's a slight worry, I think, for Darren Ferguson moving forward. I don't know if they're secure enough in that department to go top two, Peterborough. I just wonder whether they might be a playoff team this year. Yeah, there's only so many games you can give away, to, you know, a couple of goals and still win.
We mentioned Nigel Adkins is the new manager of Charlton. Adkins Addicks began with a 2-2 draw at relegation-threatened Wimbledon. We've heard what Sam thinks about this briefly. Adrian, Nigel Adkins has been out of work for a little while. He obviously interviewed quite well. And I was interested to hear Thomas Sangard say that the process of picking a manager started 6 to 8 weeks ago, which suggests that they had an inkling that Lee Bowyer might be on his way out. Is this the right man to come in and replace him?
Well, it's good that Lee gave them a heads up, isn't it? Oh, that is a really strange thing to hear, isn't it?
He's going to sack him, wouldn't he, obviously?
Mm. Well, they must have been about to sack him, yeah. Very odd. In terms of the appointment, yeah, why not? He's got a pretty good track record, hasn't he? I quite like him. I do quite like him. It's how he gels with the players, of course. He's that style of manager. He's obviously a very motivational type of person. We see from his sort of Twitter updates. He's into his psychology and sort of sound bites and stuff like that. There'll be a number of players that just aren't into that. They're not feeling it, and they might just think, not for me. But hopefully that Johnny Jackson can balance that dynamic out a little bit, and that they'll work well together. They've got good players, haven't they? And you saw that with the weekend, Jai Simi coming off the bench to make an impact. Stockley's been a great signing from January. Matson and Miller down the left, really dynamic. Forster, Dukaski and Shinny in midfield. I mean, these are all good little partnerships around the pitch. He's got quite a lot of good stuff to work with. Just got to cut out those mistakes at the back, and there was a shocker, wasn't it? I mean, Sam, I mean, if you're Akin Fumewo, you're expecting a right old rollicking, aren't you, after that one?
Yeah, I listened to Nigel Adkins post-match. And yeah, for someone taking their first game, it seemed a lot on his mind, you know, a lot that he wasn't pleased about. Obviously, defensively, there's been, I think, a catalogue of those this season for Charlton. You think back to that one in the playoff final 2 years ago, the one that slipped under Dylan Phillips's feet. But yeah, Lee Bowyer's had to get used to that, unfortunately. And yeah, I thought it was interesting the weekend because they had that early injury to Washington. And instead of bringing on, I presume an EK was on the bench. And instead of going like for like, they changed the system because of Wimbledon had started with a diamond, and then Charlton changed again in the second half. So they had a look at three different shapes, and still I thought Wimbledon were the better side in the second half. So a lot of food for thought, I suppose. But as Clarkey says, they've got good players. Forster Caskey's Rolls-Royce at the moment. I think that was Miller's best performance. He's really flattered to deceive when I've seen him live, but he made the two goals. So loads for him to work with. And I think it's a good appointment. Obviously, I said my piece earlier, but I think Nigel Adkins, you know, pound for pound, is right up there for a League One manager.
Yeah, and as for Wimbledon, still struggling to win at home, but probably pleased to get a draw against the side chasing the playoffs and looking for a new manager bounce. Okay, let's get some odds courtesy of Paddy Power with producer Abby. No championship action midweek, but it's not going to stop us building an acca. Sam, your pick for said accumulator comes from League One. Please tell us what it is.
It is Burton and Shrewsbury, I think that's the right way round, under 2.5 goals. I'm not confident enough to give you a winner of any matches, but I am confident doing this recently. I think I've hit a few of these right on the nose. And I've got a load of stuff scribbled down in front of me, but I did it real haste, so I don't really understand it. But only three teams have scored less than Shrewsbury. I can give you that. That's definitely correct. And the last time these two played, it was 1-1 on the 3rd of November. And again, Burton, apart from at the weekend, are the best defence in mainland Europe and Ireland.
Mainland Europe was an interesting way of describing it, but I'm here for it. Abby, give us some odds on that bet, please.
I really hope that the podcasters at Borussia Mönchengladbach also describe Burton as the best defence in mainland Europe. Not mainland Europe, anyway. Move on. Under 2.5 goals between Burton and Shrewsbury is 6-10 to happen. If you did want to pick a winner, then Burton are the favourites. They are 5-4 to beat Shrewsbury, with Shrewsbury 9-4. And the draw 21-10.
So if under 2.5 goals is the classic parking pick, then I think I'm getting a reputation as the both teams to score guy. And I'm going for that again in the game between Blackpool and Peterborough. What will you give me on that, please, Abby?
Equally, both teams to score, yes and no, both come out as 17-20. So yes, 17-20. And Blackpool are 9-5 to win this one, with Peterborough 6-4 and the draw 11-5.
Can I ask you to put those as a double?
You can ask me to do that. And I will tell you that if you just want to bet on League One, that is 2-1.
Okay. Quick bit about relegation too, it says here.
Yes, I've been looking at the relegation odds from Paddy Power, and there are six teams that are odds on to get relegated. And that does not make sense mathematically, because there's only four places available. But if I quickly run through those for those odds for you at the moment, then Rochdale, who are bottom of the table, they're 1-7. Then it's Wigan, who are 2-5. Also, Northampton 2-5, and Swindon 4-9. So those are the four most likely teams, according to Paddy Power, to get relegated. We then get Bristol Rovers at 8-15, and Wimbledon are 8-11.
Smashing. League 2 is our final port of call. We'll be there in a jiffy.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
League Two headlines. After a big week at Cheltenham for Sam, possibly, it was a good week for the table toppers of the town, who beat Salford at the Johnny Rocks. In the second v third battle, Big Wes Houlihan laid the smackdown on FGR. And in a first for Newport, possibly football as well, Joe Ledley's beard has been sponsored. Wales International joined the club last week. We're going to start, though, at the bottom, because Adrian had his heart broken on Saturday. Barrow 3, Crawley 2. Just take us through those final few minutes with the games involving Barrow and Southend, please, Clarky.
It was horrible. Yeah, it was absolutely... it was awful. I was away from a TV or a radio at the point, so I was sort of unaware until afterwards. And I'd only stepped away briefly, at which point Southend were winning, Barrow were drawing, so Southend had effectively closed the gap to 3 points. And then suddenly Southend concede in the last minute, and Barrow get themselves a 96th minute winner, and the gap is 7 points between Southend and Barrow. So yeah, real heartbreak for Southend. But what I would like to say is well done to Barrow, because they chased the win. They went for it. It's easy, isn't it? Oh, two apiece at home to Crawley, that would do it. But every point's valuable. No, Rob Kelly's team kept on going, and they won a cracking match by 3-2. All 3 goals from set pieces. Obviously, one was a penalty that was won via a set piece. But yeah, it's goals like that, cheap goals like that, that Southend have not been able to conjure up enough of this season. They score worldies. They just don't score enough. They don't score enough scrappy goals. Just 14 goals in open play all season, Southend, 22 all season. It's come to crunch time. They need to sort of win matches and win them fast.
On Barrow, Sam, they've had a couple of goes at getting the right manager, and it looks like it might be a case of third time's a charm for them. Rob Kelly, vastly experienced coach, more used to being the number two, but he's doing a fantastic job there so far, 4 wins in a row.
Yeah, absolutely incredible transformation. I think I spoke about him a few weeks ago, like really varied career, vastly experienced, and yeah, absolutely brilliant. 4 straight league wins. I mean, to achieve that in your first year up is some achievement, and Clarkie's bang on. Really went for it at the death the other day, a point against Crawley, a decent mid-table Crawley side's not a bad result. And Glenn Morris made an amazing save, actually, from Quigley just prior to the corner being full stone. Glenn Morris, who is the cat nicknamed, which was, I think, Peter Bonetti's nickname, was it? And probably every goalkeeper since. But I just quite enjoyed it because I swear, I've probably said this on this podcast before, I played with him at Orient. I've never known his name. I thought he was just the cat. About 15 years later, I saw that he was still playing for Crawley, and I was like, oh, there's Kat. But brilliant. And I wasn't aware that Barrow had such good experience as well. Erdley, who had a really good career, Ollie Banks is there now, and Jason Taylor as well. So some players with some nous and a manager now in charge who undoubtedly, it looks like, maybe given the main gig.
And one other thing, Matt, he was able to rotate. They went big in January, remember, in terms of signing players, Barrow, signed loads. And that, I think, is paying off now because they went to Cheltenham, tough game, but they win 2-0. You think, well, he'd keep the same team. But no, given the circumstances, the travel, he's freshened it up with, I think, 3 or 4 different players. And they've gone again and won a tough game against Crawley. And again, going back to Southend, the recruitment, just an absolute shambles, really, for a couple of years. And I think they're paying the heaviest price for that now.
Last game I want to touch on is Tranmere 2, Exeter 1. Been a busy old week for Tranmere, and they've got some momentum.
Yeah, and they've been missing their talisman, James Vaughan, throughout all of this. So this is a really good result. Quite a grubby win, I'd probably say. I don't think they fully deserved it. And obviously, a couple of contentious penalties as well. But what I will say is, I really like this Tranmere team and Tranmere squad. When I've seen them in the flesh, this is quite a side that are adaptable. They play quite sophisticated shapes at times. They've been playing with a false nine, Lewis, on occasions. It was, I think, 4-2-3-1 at the weekend, and Nugent got the nod. So he's just going to be, I would imagine, an impact player moving forward, but came in, got himself a goal. And Danny Lloyd, who's another real talented forward, came on and got the other one. But this is the type of game that Exeter have maybe just grown slightly accustomed to losing this season. But great victory for Tranmere nonetheless. And they've got a real chance, I would say, considering they've played big games, big pressure games, Wembley finals, playoff finals, and got good experience as well.
Yeah, Sam's absolutely bang on when he says it's the kind of game that they've grown used to losing. Not beating anyone away from home that's in the top half this season, Exeter. And when you're a playoff chasing side, that's not a great sign, is it? And they've never strung 3 wins together either. We've just talked about Barrow going 4-4 on the trot. Exeter have only got to 2. So again, they've just not been able to string anything together. So for me, yeah, just not quite robust enough. And it was fascinating afterwards. Keith Hill said he rates this Exeter team as a League One team, and he thinks that they would do better in some respects in League One than League Two because of the talent that they've got. But obviously getting out of this division It's proving quite problematic, isn't it, for the Grecians?
Yeah, not all bad news for them this week, though. David Ornstein pointing out in his Athletic column on Monday that Exeter will get 150 grand if Ollie Watkins plays for England over the international break as part of the deal that they struck with Brentford when he moved there. They'll also get £150,000 because Villa won't get relegated this season. So a nice little windfall for them there. Speaking of windfalls, that's what you'll get if Aka comes in and you bet on it. Adrian, your pick for said bet comes from League Two.
Yeah, absolutely heart over head here. So I apologise if this is the one that falls down on us this week. But I'm going for Southend. I'm going for Southend to beat Wolves. So it's come to the crunch time. They've got to go for the win. These 0-0 draws aren't going to cut it anymore. Pressure's on. The heartbreak from the weekend. I'm hoping that it will fire them up to deliver a big performance just when they kind of need it. And Wolves will be gutted because they threw away a lead at Bolton last time out and they might be a little bit fed up. So I'm going to go with Southend to get that 3 points that they need, please.
Abby, what are the odds on that?
Yeah, this is quite hefty. This is 21 to 10 for Southend to beat Walsall. Walsall are the favourites in this one, 13 to 10.
Now, via the magic of audio, we can welcome back Ryan Conway for his Acca pick.
Yeah, I'm picking Exeter to beat Oldham Athletic. My hometown team of Oldham, who I weep for, but Exeter are going good at the minute and Oldham are, I just fear for them, man. I don't think they'll get anything out of that game.
Abby, is Ryan's fear well-placed according to the odds?
It is indeed. The Oldham are 3-1 to win this game, whilst Exeter are odds on 4-5 and the draw coming in at 13-5. Put that all together and we get our Acca result of 15.52 to 1. Just so we're all aware of how much of an impact Clarkie's bet has had on the Acca as a treble, it's just 4-1, and now it's 15.52 to 1. Quite big.
Well, we'll all be spending our winnings buying you a drink if it comes in, Clarkie. That's for sure. You can find out these odds and more on the Paddy Power app or paddypower.com. It's over 18s only. Terms and conditions apply. And when the fun stops, stop. And wouldn't you just know it, just after we finished recording, Salford City announced that they had parted company with Richie Wellens by mutual consent in a very terse statement. More on that on Extra Time with George and Ali on Thursday. Okay, we're just about done for this week. I'm going to throw this one on you blind though, guys, before we go. We've all been enjoying Nigel Adkins' Twitter motivational talks. His one this morning, that is Monday, says that we should all have 3 goals for ourselves for the day. I just want one. Clarkie, what's your goal for the rest of the day?
My goal is to not throw my broadband router out of the window because it keeps dropping out every single day and I'm sick of it. And I just need to contain my temper and I'll be really proud of myself if I can.
We'll give you an update on that one next week, listener. How about you, Sam? Goal for the day, find another obscure BBC local radio station to tune in for coverage of a League Two side?
I am about to go for a wander. Probably not leave the house without everything I need to change my baby's backside if he is to go, because I don't want to be in a park without baby wipes.
Yeah, you find that out the hard way. It's a mistake you only make once. Mine is also parent-related. I'm going to try and convince my son that other people can choose the animals that might be present on old McDonald's farm, because he's running it a bit like a dictatorship at the moment and it's not good. Speaking of which, we will be back next week. Abby will be back on Thursday with George and Ali for Extra Time. Join them if you can and be back with us next week. Until then, stay safe. Bye for now.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and by following at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Finding it difficult to get off to sleep? Well, you are not alone. After a long day of Zoom, doom, and gloom, it's hard to relax and just drop off. Maybe you need a bedtime story. I know, there's a lot of them out there. They ask you to imagine that you're laying on a lily of contentedness, drifting upon a lake of calm, holding hands with the otter of placidity. R1 isn't like that. It's a football bedtime story, and it sounds like this.
When Brian Clough arrived at Nottingham Forest in January 1975, they were a mediocre provincial club whose most recent success was winning the FA Cup in 1959. But they were 13th in the old second division now. Clough, too, was damaged goods.
So give it a go tonight. Subscribe to Football Bedtime Stories on your favourite podcast provider now.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.